This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. An estimated 1 out of 60 children in Maryland has an autism spectrum disorder. That's higher than the estimate of a couple years ago. This past spring, we got a new awareness of how common the disorder is from a report conducted by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and researchers from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. In a moment, we'll hear from the Bloomberg School's principal investigator on that report and from the director of the Center for Autism and Related Disorders at Kennedy Krieger Institute. First, we want to get a picture of what it's like for a family who has a child with ASD, an autism spectrum disorder. Alyssa Rock has two sons, Connor and Aiden. Connor is 15 years old, and he has moderate autism. Alyssa Rock interviewed her son Connor in April, and we learned a little more about him.
Okay, Connor, what would you like to talk about today?
To cook cake.
You like to cook cakes?
Yes.
What did you make yesterday with Ian? You need help? How about snickerdoodle cookies?
Yes, with Aaron.
What else do you like to do, Connor, besides cooking?
Arts and crafts.
Arts and crafts?
Yes.
What kind of things do you do in arts and crafts?
Mugs and bird feeders and bird houses and stools and crates.
You paint mugs and bird feeders?
And bird houses.
And bird houses?
And stools.
Okay.
And crates.
And crates. So, Connor, what do you want to be when you grow up?
A chef at 125 Rainbridge Lane and room 101.
So you want to be a chef and you want to live on your own?
At 125 Rainbridge Lane and room 101 with my roommate.
So you want to have a roommate and live on Rambling Ridge Lane?
And I want Catherine Keene to live there with Connor at your new place.
Oh, you've already picked out a roommate?
Yes!
Oh, that's exciting.
You can do it when you graduate from school.
Yeah, we have to get through school first.
Sorry.
That's okay, though. You gotta learn things to be a chef, right?
Right.
What kind of things do you need to be a chef?
Good language.
Right. And what about your behavior?
Good.
Appropriate behavior?
Being appropriate.
Yeah.
Especially.
That's right. Thanks for talking to me, Connor.
Bye.
That was Connor Wade being interviewed by his mom, Alyssa Rock. When I spoke with Alyssa in April, I asked her when Connor had been diagnosed with autism.
He was diagnosed at age 3.5.
And was that a long time coming? I mean, had you noticed things or?
He seemed typical until shortly before his second birthday. He regressed and lost a number of skills, his eye contact, his language that he had had. He was speaking in short sentences and he stopped sleeping through the night. And so we began a year and a half long journey of specialists and different medical providers trying to figure out what exactly was going on with him.
That was in 2002. We knew less about autism spectrum disorders than now. What were the resources like for you then, for Connor?
Well, we were able to get him started on speech therapy and occupational therapy. There's a therapy, applied behavioral analysis. It took us a while to find out about that, and that's really intensive behavioral intervention. So I would say resources were hard to come by in terms of trying to figure out what exactly to do to help our son.
What kind of services does Connor get?
Well, over the years, we've done a lot of different things. We did occupational therapy, speech therapy. We also did a number of biomedical interventions with him. He had a special doctor that we went to Richmond, Virginia to consult with. We did a lot of work in our home with providers and therapists coming into the home for a long time.
But he's in school.
That's correct. He was schooled in our home for 6 or 7 years. And then when he saw his younger brother getting on the bus and going to school, he decided he wanted to go to school.
That's Alyssa Rock here on Maryland Morning on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Alyssa, we're talking with her about her experiences raising Connor, age 15, who is on the autism spectrum. Your younger son, Aiden, does not have autism.
That's correct.
Neurotypical is the scientific description. When he was old enough to observe that there were some differences between him and his brother, how did you explain that to Aiden?
I don't know. We've always just been very open and honest and frank with Aiden about his brother and his autism. it wasn't like we sat down and had a big conversation. We just, oh, your brother has autism, and that means his brain's developing differently, but that's okay. And that's just Connor. That's just who he is.
What kind of impact do you think Connor's situation has on Aiden?
I think that it's been very overwhelming for Aiden. Our son has had a tremendous amount of behavioral challenges.
Connor.
Mm-hmm. And that means that Aiden has been targeted with aggression. He's seen a lot of tantrum behavior. Connor's behavior can be unpredictable in public sometimes. And as Aiden's grown older, that's been harder. Now that he's in middle school, you know, he's very socially aware. But Aiden is an amazing person, and he loves his brother very much. And we just all do the best we can to support Connor.
How does the situation affect you and your husband?
It's stressful, but we try to maintain our partnership. We're a team, and we both just really want the best for our kids and for, you know, obviously to support Connor the best that we can.
You write a blog called Rock Autism Experience. And you write very candidly about you and your husband's experiences raising Connor. Why did you start the blog?
Originally, I started it around 2004, but just to keep friends and family kind of up to date about what was going on with Connor. Then I really started writing it to really help people understand what the challenges were that our family was facing. I don't think everybody really understood what a struggle we were going through, and, you know, that we still go through, and why exactly it's so difficult sometimes to raise Connor.
What is it that you think people most don't understand about family life that involves autism?
I guess just that, you know, we're not just upset that our child's not going to, you know, ever be president of the United States. You know, there are very real everyday things that my son struggles with all the time. At 15, you know, still toileting can be a problem. Sometimes it feels like it's just a one-way street where I'm doing all the work in the relationship and I'm not getting anything out of him. And that there's an overwhelming amount of planning and routine that we have to follow to keep him on the level. So I think people don't understand kind of the day-to-day grind it can be. And, you know, I love my son very much. He's a wonderful person. But he does have a significant behavior problem. And that is also very difficult. It's difficult emotionally. It's difficult physically, trying to manage when he does have at Kenny Krieger, they call it a burst, takes the emotion out of it when he has a burst. Because a 15-year-old, 130-pound kid having tantrum behavior is very hard. So I think people don't understand that as much.
What would you like people to know about children with ASD? We were talking about families, but...
Sure. I would like people to know that children with autism spectrum disorder can have very fulfilling, productive, wonderful lives, but they need the support and the services from their families and their communities. And by that I mean someone needs to help families afford the care that their child needs, whether that's social skills groups or whether that means in-home, awake 24-hour care for an individual who's more affected. I feel like our community is failing these kids in many ways because it is so expensive to give them the supports that they need, but that's what they need to be successful.
I really appreciate your giving us this look at it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Alyssa Rock writes the blog Rock Autism Experience. She's got two sons, Connor and Aiden. Connor is 15 years old. He has autism. We heard from him earlier. It's Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking this morning about autism. The report I mentioned about the prevalence of ASD was conducted by the CDC and researchers at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. They found 1 in 68 children nationwide affected by ASD, an increase of nearly 30% in 2 years. In Maryland, the incidence is a bit higher, 1 in 60 children, more common among boys than girls. Producer Jamila Kay spoke with Dr. Li-Ching Li, a psychiatric epidemiologist at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School. Dr. Li is the principal investigator for the CDC's Autism and Developmental Disabilities Monitoring Network in Maryland. She said it's difficult to tease out the factors that have led to an increase in diagnosing autism year after year.
The increase is likely due to, in part, a broadened definition of autism spectrum disorder, greater awareness among the public and professionals, and the way children receive services in their local communities. It is very difficult, if not impossible, to tease these factors apart to quantify how much each of these factors contribute to the increase over time.
That's Dr. Li-Ching Li, a psychiatric epidemiologist at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School. She spoke to Marilyn Morning in April. We also spoke with Dr. Rebecca Landa, director of the Center for Autism and Related Disorders, CARD, at Kennedy Krieger Institute in Baltimore. Dr. Li had pointed to greater awareness of autism and a broader definition, so I asked Dr. Landa what other factors could contribute to this increased prevalence of autism diagnosis.
I think Dr. Li has it right. I think we really have gotten better to tune in, so to speak, at the kinds of social communication difficulties these folks are having, being able to actually ask the right questions to understand the nature of their impairment around their social cognitive difficulties and also around these restricted patterns of behavior and interests.
And of course, autism disorder covers a spectrum. Are researchers seeing an increase in the number of kids who are high-functioning, low-functioning Asperger's? I mean, is the increase sort of seen across the spectrum, or is it concentrated in one part?
What the CDC report is indicating is that the increase is in the children who are not having the intellectual impairments. It's the kids who are having, as you said, higher functioning.
That's where we're seeing the increase. The report says that boys are 5 times more likely than girls to be diagnosed on the autism spectrum. Do we know why?
We really don't. There is research looking into this to understand, is it something related to the sex chromosomes? Is it related to hormonal factors? We really don't have an answer to this right now.
Why does autism affect more white children than children of color?
For right now, I mean, there's certainly research going on looking into possible neurobiological factors, but right now we have to point to some factors that might be cultural, maybe the way that certain behaviors are viewed. So in some cultures, being able to entertain yourself and play without seeking out social attention from adults is not a bad thing. There's also difficulties in some cultural groups where maybe the mother is concerned, but there are taboos against her talking about it. So, I mean, these are complex things that we need to understand more about.
What went through your, I mean, I'm sure you sort of saw this report gestating, so I guess you didn't have like a moment of, oh my gosh, but I mean, was there a moment like that when you were struck by something about the new data on incidence of autism?
Well, the biggest thing that hits me is that really autism is not a rare disorder, and that, you know, at least 1% of the population is affected with this disorder, and we really must be working extra hard to identify it as early in life as possible, because that's when the brain is most plastic. Then for kids who aren't getting identified early, and even for those who are, we need to be equipping teachers to really know what to do with students in their classroom who have this disorder in a way that's going to give them the building blocks for success in education and life afterward. I think we also have to equip parents with strategies for living their life with autism. You know, they have to be able to stay strong. They have to be able to get rest. They have to have a peer group. They have to have supports. And they have to be able to keep a positive attitude. And I know that sounds maybe impossible against some of the challenges But we have to, as a society, embrace families who have needs, whether it's autism or anything. Another thing that's really important in the field of autism is to understand that when you have autism, very often there's a co-occurring other health challenge. That can be a GI problem, it can be sleep problems, it can be behavioral challenges such as aggression, self-injury, it can be epilepsy. It's important for physicians to keep their eyes open in their patients who have an autism spectrum disorder, just so that they're constantly monitoring whether one of these other things is hitting the scene and needs to be worked up.
That's Rebecca Landa, director of the Center for Autism and Related Disorders, CARD, at Kennedy Krieger Institute here on Maryland Morning at 8:1. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about new research and resources for parents with children on the autism spectrum. Dr. Li-Ching Li told us that kids aren't being diagnosed as early as they could be.
On average, children are diagnosed at the age of 4 years and 8 months in Maryland. Even though the diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder can be determined as early as age two, so there is much work ahead of us to catch up and close the gap.
Dr. Landa, how does early intervention affect a child's outcomes?
We have to think about what are the core impairments of autism, and it really comes down to it's a social disability, there's difficulty learning the nuances of language, and there are fixations or tendencies to repetitive behavior. And if we allow a child to go on through development in the first 3 to 4 years of life with those difficulties and not intervene, imagine how year by year they get further behind their peers and less equipped to be able to establish friendships and to create for themselves the kinds of social interactions that really promote social and communication learning. We can change children's joint attention or social attention abilities, their ability to communicate effectively and to gesture and to learn to imitate other kids and to play with other kids. We can change that in a 1- and 2-year-old with autism.
You and I talked about a year ago. What is new since then or more developed since then in terms of initiatives and resources for children and their parents?
Well, one of the things that we've done is to create something for the American Academy of Pediatrics, and it's a 9-minute tutorial. And basically, it shows 3 pairs of 1-year-olds, one without autism and one who's showing signs of risk for ASD. And these videos are narrated, and so it points out for families and doctors what these early signs look like. So that's a really great resource.
Are we anywhere closer to understanding the cause of autism?
I think one of the big pieces of news is that the behavioral abnormalities come on very slowly and gradually in most babies and really aren't showing up in mid-infancy in the way that most people would expect them to. So the very earliest signs that something is awry actually involve the motor system, and they can be very mild signs, and they don't promise that you're going to have autism. But if there's a family history of autism and then there are these motor delays, even if they're subtle, families want to make sure that they connect with somebody who can give them ideas to strengthen their child's development.
Does that research indicate that we're going to be able to diagnose autism spectrum disorder even earlier?
Well, what we've found through our studies of infant siblings of children with autism is that 20% of subsequently born children to a family who already has a child with autism are going to have autism. And another 30% will have something milder, another type of language or social delay. And so through studying these baby siblings of children with autism from the time they're infants and until they're older, we actually can see what those risk signs are for autism. And I do believe that someday we will be able to identify babies who are going to have autism during infancy. Right now, we can identify babies who are at risk for having autism, but we cannot definitively diagnose autism in infancy.
I really appreciate your talking to us about it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dr. Rebecca Landa is director of the Center for Autism and Related Disorders, CARD, at Kennedy Krieger Institute. We have more of this interview and an extended conversation with Alyssa Rock all at our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. You can also hear Alyssa Rock reading from her blog. I'm Sheila Cass. Coming up, a senior portrait of a woman who's spending her retirement doing whatever pleases her. Stay with us on 88.1.